Was that the second bell? Woo! You want to turn me down? I have a tendency to project. All right. I think that was the second bell. We're in 2 Samuel chapter 16 is where we'll begin this morning. 2 Samuel 16. We'll cover 16 and 17, and I'm probably going to stand here a lot more today because there are a whole bunch of names that I'm going to butcher, and I will probably never say them the same way twice. So we've got that going for us too. So everybody gets to guess who I'm actually talking about. But some difficult names in this lesson. There's a lot of different characters that move in and out. And so, you follow with me as we go through 2 Samuel chapter 16 and 17. But as a point of review, we remember the timeline that's been presented, and this is one that Tim talked about yesterday. We're all the way up to the rebellion of Absalom, and now we just saw David being driven out of Jerusalem. So in 15, we're seeing him leave, and we're seeing these many are sad on his way out, but some want to come with him. Hushai, I guess I'm going to say it like that. Probably. In my mind, I say it like three different ways, so we'll just see what comes out. But Hushai, the priest, wants to come with David, and remember that he wanted him to stay behind. Actually kind of sets up his own little spy network there, because the priest, Zadok and Abiathar, are also wanting to go with him, but they stay behind, and Ahimaaz and Jonathan are kind of the runners, if we remember that from Wednesday night. So that's some of the background of where we are, and we'll see that in action today. So we're still working on his exit from Jerusalem as he's heading down into the Jordan Valley and leaving. And I'll get to a map much later in the presentation, but if we can mentally lay out Israel in our head, then Hebron, which is where Absalom was, is to the south of Jerusalem. And David and his entourage is actually exiting toward the north so that they can go down and cross the Jordan River. And so they're all moving together the same way. But as David's leaving and outside the city, he runs across this man named Ziba, who's a servant of Mephibosheth. And the servant walks up to him with set of donkeys with a whole bunch of, food on it, right? Different things to eat and to drink. And he presents it to David. And this is in the beginning of the 16th chapter. And David the king in verse 2 asked Ziba, why do you have these? And Ziba says, they're for you. And then in verse 3, he says, and where's your master's son? And now that would be Mephibosheth. And do we remember who Mephibosheth was? Maybe that's where we should start, right? Do we remember who he was? He's Jonathan's son, right? Yeah, so he's Saul's grandson. And he's one of the few that would be left in Saul's family line that would be considered kind of next in line had Saul's family ruled. And so, it is in the 9th chapter of 2 Samuel that we see David, calls for him and takes care of him. And we'll refer to this a little bit later because there's another character that we see that shows back up. But in the 9th chapter of 2 Samuel, he calls for Mephibosheth to be brought in, and then he treats him kind of like one of his own children. And so, David kind of wonders where Mephibosheth is. Now, remember, Mephibosheth was the son who was dropped whenever they were fleeing, and so he was lame, right? He could not move around as well. He was unable to walk, or at least lame, where it was difficult for him to. And when David asked Ziba, "Where's your servant? You know, where's the son of your servant?" He's asking, you know, "Where's Mephibosheth?" And Ziba's reply in 16:3 is a quote that he assumes is from Mephibosheth's mouth, which is, "Today the house of Israel will restore the kingdom of my father to me." So the only reason he's staying back is because he believes that the kingdom now is going to come back into Saul's family and he's going to be the king. Right? And David takes this comment at face value. We'll get to this later. But David, you know, hears this counsel from Ziba, and he then in verse 4 kind of reacts to that and says, "Behold, all things that belong to Mephibosheth is yours." And then, you know, Ziba basically thanks him and says, "Thank you for finding favor in my sight." And that's kind of all we hear right now. So at some point here in the next couple of weeks, we will see kind of really what the backstory was. But so David, having been driven out of the city by his own son and now seeing, or hearing about this, I mean, you can imagine some of the emotional things that are going through his mind. But then he continues on. And he gets to a town called Bahurim. And it's there where we meet another, individual called Shimei. And we will see him all the way through into 1 Kings as well. Shimei is a distant relative of Saul. And Shimei comes out to meet this crowd. And what does he begin to do to them? He curses them. He also hurls stones at them, right? And his comments are pretty direct, to the king. In verse 7, he says, get out, you man of bloodshed and worthless fellow. The Lord has returned upon you all the bloodshed of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned, and the Lord has given the kingdom into the hand of your son Absalom. And behold, you are taken in your own evil, for you are a man of bloodshed. So, Shimei equates the things that David has done in the past as to why this is occurring. Okay? Now, he's got a lot of men with him, David does, right? And he's got his mighty men with him. And so one of these men is named Abishai. Where do we know him from? You remember? We've seen and been introduced to him in the past. He is the brother of Joab. And he has another story with David where he and David go and do something. And that's in 1 Samuel chapter 26. Go over to 1 Samuel chapter 26. You'll see it is he and Abishai who go down when Saul is encamped and is sleeping. And what do? They take a jug of water and a spear from right beside Saul's head. They walk all the way into the camp. Saul's in the middle. They're sleeping. They take this. And Abishai there says something to David. Right? What does he say to David? That's right. I'll just drive this thing right through him right now, and that'll be it. Right? We won't need to do this again. Now, this is the second time that's recorded for us that we see that David's mighty men are encouraging David, and David has a real opportunity to eliminate Saul, right? Who he's been running from this entire time. Right? I mean, this lengthy number of years. Yet, David doesn't allow him to do that then. And he didn't allow their influence to kill him the first time either, whenever he was in the cave and he clipped off a piece of the garment. I think that was the first time. So, Abishai's been around David for a number of years, And his reaction is, you know, seems to be always, well, I can take care of this right now. We can eliminate this. So what is Abishai's reaction in verse 9 of chapter 16? Huh? Yeah, pretty much the same thing, right? He says, why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over and cut his head off, right? I'll take care of this right now. We'll eliminate this problem right now. I'll just go cut his head off. So David has to come back, and he tells Abishai, and then he tells the whole group. He talks about the fact that, you know, what if the Lord is actually the one who's told him to do this, right? He realizes he's still in punishment. He's still reeling from the results of his sin and mistake with Bathsheba. Right? And in chapter 11, right, or chapter 12, verse 11, yeah, we know that evil's going to be raised up against him. In verse 10, the sword's never going to leave his house. And so David understands he is still, you know, subject to the Lord and the repercussions of what has been going on with his sin. And he reasons with them, in verse 11 and says, behold, my son who came out from me seeks my life. How much more now this Benjamite? Let him alone and let him curse, for the Lord has told him. He doesn't know if the Lord's told him that, but he can certainly he can certainly see where the Lord may be using Shimei, right, to drive home the point of the sin. So he says, we've got to let this go. Now, we certainly hear a lot more about this story later, especially when David returns. And so we cannot forget Shimei and what he's done here. But his mighty men, you know, are around him. They continue to protect David as they go all the way down and toward the Jordan River. And Shimei continues to go along and he's throwing dirt at them, and he's hurling insults and cursing them and throwing rocks the entire way. So they're having to deal with that on their exit. And then in verse 15, kind of the scene flips. So we've gotten David all the way out down toward the Jordan, and now in verse 15 we see Absalom as he enters in to the, as he enters into Jerusalem. Okay. So now we see this scene as it occurs, and obviously he enters into Jerusalem with no resistance, because David and all of the men that follow him have gone already, right? The in verse 15, at the end of that verse, there's one statement that strikes me, and that is, Ahithophel was with him. So if we remember, when Absalom was trying to do this rebellion, right, Ahithophel was up worshiping, and Absalom called him to him, seems to come completely not knowing what was going on, right? He shows up to Absalom's, party or, you know, whatever in Hebron, unknowing that Absalom's about to try to take over the kingdom. But now, after all this has occurred, Ahithophel is with him. So, now, one thing that surprises Absalom is Hushai. So, Hushai, the priest, remember, that is left behind by David, comes up, greets Absalom, and, you know, I kind of look at it as Absalom seems kind of surprised about this, right? In verse 17, he says, is this your loyalty to your friend? Why did you not go with your friend? You know, he tried to go with David. And Absalom knows that they have a very good relationship. So he's confused. But Hushai is able to convince him that, who should I serve? I served your father. I should also serve you. And what I say is, gives, you know, kind of builds up Absalom's head, if you will, by, in verse 18, saying, "No, for whom the Lord, this people, and all the men of Israel have chosen, this I will be, and with him I will remain." Kind of suggesting to Absalom that, you know, it's not only the people, but it's all of Israel and the Lord that are behind you, and I should just be loyal to that. So Absalom buys off, if you will, on that concept, and then he turns over to Ahithophel and he says, "So give me some advice. What do I do now?" And the advice of Ahithophel pretty much directly correlates to what God said would happen in chapter 12, verse 11. Right? At the end of chapter 12, verse 11, we see that the statement is, "I will even take your wives before your eyes and give them to your companion, and he will lie with your wives in broad daylight." So Ahithophel's advice is, you know, I'll put it in kind of our language today, or what I would consider to be what we would say today, right? You want to make sure this thing's going to happen, and you want to convince everybody that your father is not going to come back and y'all are going to make up and then you're going to be the prince and he's going to be the king again, right? You sell that relationship and you make sure everybody understands that there is no way that David can come back and forgive you from this. So you go in and you lie with the concubines he left behind. And that will seal the deal and everybody will get it. Everybody will completely understand that this is not going anywhere, right? That David is over. And so he takes that advice. It says they set up a tent. Right? They set up a tent, on the roof, and he goes and does that. So they pitched the tent for Absalom on the roof in verse 22. And I think one of the key points for Ahithophel is the last statement in chapter 16. The advice of Ahithophel, which he gave in those days, was as if one inquired of the word of God. So all the advice of Ahithophel regarded so was all the advice of Ahithophel regarded by both David and Absalom. If we remember that David's reaction in 15 and verse 31, whenever he hears that Ahithophel has sided with Absalom, or was in Hebron with Absalom, we remember back, David says to the Lord, "I pray that, Ahithophel is among us." David says, "O Lord, I pray, make the counsel of Ahithophel foolishness." Right? Because he realizes that this was a man who he got a lot of good advice from, a lot of good counsel from, and he knows that if he continues that way, that David could be in some serious trouble himself, because he's got a man that, can speak in ways that, you know, that it's almost like it came from God, because he's a man that was very righteous and gave good counsel. So Ahithophel says, but there's another thing you need to do, right, besides just going into your wife's concubines, and that is, give me 12,000 men. And allow me to pursue David tonight, and I can go in, as we would call today a surgical strike, right? I could go in and just take David out. And there's not going to be a lot of bloodshed. I can find him, I can take him out, and then this whole thing can be over, and then there will be no questions anymore. Right? David will be gone, you will be the king, everybody will have to just deal with the fact, and the mighty man, and everyone will become, you know, under you and subject to you. So, does Absalom like this advice? Absolutely. It says he and the elders, right? They're like, hey, that's a good plan. But Absalom does what? Yeah. He decides he's going to ask Hushai, or however I say it. He decides he's going to ask him to kind of validate that, right? Because he's like, now here's an opportunity for Hushai to be able to, come in and back this up. So now we have an opportunity for some of the things that David did whenever he was leaving to begin to take effect, right? So Hushai hears this and, he realizes pretty much the technique that David's going to use and realizes that this advice could be deadly, right? This could be the end of David. And so he actually goes through this very well, I would say, logically thought out discussion, right? That allows not only Absalom to understand, but also the elders to agree and says, well, David's a man of war. He is, he's not going to just be laying out there in the open. If they go down there, they go traipsing down there to try to just kill David. They're not going to find him. They're going to find all these mighty men who are willing to, battle to the death. There will be a ton of bloodshed. You're not going to be able to accomplish what was, what you think you can. And, so what you need to do is gather up all the troops in Israel that you have, right? Like the sands of the shore. You go gather up all your men. You come against him. And then when you go over to actually face David, there will be, no way he can stand against you. You'll just have so many people on your side. And, what does that also play to as far as Absalom? Kind of plays to his own ego, right? I mean, I'm the king. I'll have this massive, troops behind me, and I'll go into battle with everyone behind me, and then we'll take it over. So he talks about if he even goes into a city, then we'll take ropes and put it around the city, and we'll drag it down. There's not even going to be a small stone to get, next to each other. All this, I mean, you will totally obliterate them if you just wait and gather up your team, right? Your troops. So they consider that, and they really like this idea. They think, yeah, that's probably the better way to go. So now, what does Hushai do? As soon as he leaves there, he probably hears Absalom and others considering that and thinking, boy, that's a good idea. But he runs over to Zadok and Abiathar, who are the priest, right? Remember this little spy ring that they've set up, right? The two priests and then their sons, and the sons would be the runners coming back and forth. So he goes to the priest and he says, listen, this is what Ahithophel said, and this is what I told him. But you better run, because if they consider his advice, they're all in trouble. So they enact, making sure that Jonathan and Ahimaaz, get the word. Now, at this point, their transfer mechanism was the priests were to tell this maid servant, who would then go right outside the city wall, a little spring, I think, called in Rogel, right? Which is sitting right outside the city wall. This maidservant would go out there. The two would be sitting outside the wall because they didn't want to have people observing them coming in and out of the city. That would look a little obvious, right? Going through gates and stuff. So they're already outside. This maidservant comes out, tells them the information she needs to get to David, or that they need to get to David. But there's an issue. There's a young man who's walking by, and he sees apparently these two out there, and they're in this conversation, and he raises it immediately back to Absalom and says, hey, I saw these people out here doing some things, and you may want to try to figure out what that is. So Absalom immediately sends some young men out to try to figure out where they are. These two have run off. They've already headed off, and they've gone to, they also went to Ben-Hai, right? Ben-Hai or Bahurim. And once they get there, they find a well, and they kind of hide in the mouth of the well, and the lady of the house there spreads out this big, cover, and then throws some grain on it. Looks like, you know, it's been there, and they're barking all this, and she hides them. The young men come up from Absalom, that Absalom had sent out. They ask, they're trying to find them. She kind of points them in the wrong direction. And they go on. And now, the two, as soon as they're clear, leave, and they get to David. And they tell him he's got to keep moving. We see that, you know, they're pretty tired already. Yet, him and this entire crowd has to continue on to the other side, because if Ahithophel's advice is followed, right, then many things are lost. All right, I can't see that back here, but let's see. So Hebron is actually down here off the map, and Jerusalem's up here. They would have been traveling because, you know, that Shimei is out of Benjamin, the tribe of Benjamin, so they would travel up here, and they would have crossed the Jordan down here, kind of near the mouth of the Salt Sea. We see in a few minutes that their ultimate destination is way up here to the north. And so at the end of chapter 17, they reach, in verse 27, 17:27, it says, now when David had come to Mahanaim, and then it lists three men who come to him and help provide for him. So they have to travel a significant distance trying to get away from Absalom. And it's a difficult path, especially as they come through the mountains and get down into the Jordan Valley. We should remember that, you know, this is high ground. This is extremely low ground, actually below sea level. And then we come back up into high ground. So it's pretty rough terrain. They're having to move through a lot of different altitudes just to get back up to where they wind up. In verse 27, we see three different men who have come to him to provide for him. We see Shobi, the son of Nahash. We read about Nahash before, because Nahash is the king of the Ammonites that early in Saul's reign go and siege the city, tells them to give up, then says, the only way I'll let you give up before destroying you is I'm going to poke out your right eye. Remember that story? He's going to go and he's going to poke out the men of Israel's their right eye, so that they obviously would be at a disadvantage. And they convince him to give him a few days. They send runners over to Saul. Then Saul comes in with a big group, and the Lord gives them a victory that sends all these men running in different directions. But Shobi is now the son of this king of Ammon that they had problems with early on, especially in their son. And then we have Makar, the son of Amiel from Lodibar. Like I said, I'm butchering that. Now, Makar is is the guy back in 2 Samuel chapter 9. What did we just refer to that earlier in this lesson? What happened in 2 Samuel chapter 9? That's about Mephibosheth. Okay. So Makar is actually the man who was taking care of Mephibosheth before he is brought over to David. Okay. So he comes to David there, and also a man by the name of Barzillai. And we'll hear more about Barzillai later, but this is, I think, the first time that he is mentioned in this. And they come, and they really take care of all the needs. They give them, it says beds, basins, pottery, wheat, flour, so that, food and shelter and housing and all those kind of things. And it says the people are hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness, those who are with David. So it's quite the journey right here as David has to also deal with the fact that it's his own son that has kicked him out of Jerusalem, and he has to work through that. So the other thing that we need to review today is Psalms, the third chapter. This is Psalm chapter 3. We see this prayer, I think, that David writes. I'll read it quickly. O Lord, how my adversaries have increased. Many are rising up against me. Many are saying of my soul, there is no deliverance for him in God. But you, O Lord, are a shield about me, my glory, and the one who lifts my head. I was crying to the Lord with my voice, and he answered me from his holy mountain. I lay down and slept. I awoke, for the Lord sustains me. I will not be afraid of 10,000 people who have set themselves against me round about. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for you have smitten all my enemies on the cheek. You have shattered the teeth of the wicked. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Your blessings be upon your people. So we see that it's actually told that, that this is one that he wrote as he fled from Absalom his son. And you can certainly see a lot of the emotion that David has with all the things that have happened and the weariness and the fact that he still looks to God being the shield. Right? And so that we see some of the character of David coming through, because he still looks to God being the shield. He still sees God as the salvation, right? And he understands that God will take care of him the way he should. Especially even the part in verse 5 where it says, I lay down and slept, and I awoke, for the Lord sustains me. So many different ways that David has been taken care of on his journey out. And the Lord is sustaining him. So there are quite a few other psalms that many believe, and I'm all up there, that are probably written around this time frame. And I think some of the most interesting, because I always question, how do we know these things? And there was an interesting point made of what clues do we have that help us understand why we think some of these psalms are written in this time frame. One of them is that David's in trouble, right? Because we don't often read of David being in trouble. But if there's a reference to David being in trouble, right, it could be one of two time frames. One is Saul's coming after him, right? And that whole time of trouble that he had while Saul was pursuing him, or during this time. Okay? So it takes another contextual clue there, and that would be if David is stated, or there's a reference to reigning in Jerusalem. Because did Saul reign in Jerusalem? No. So if they're talking about reigning in Jerusalem, or even the ark being in Jerusalem, those did not happen during the time of Saul. So if David is in trouble, and we see Jerusalem being also stated in there, then it's probably most likely this time frame that would be either being referred to or, you know, being written about specifically. So those are a couple of things that we can consider whenever we're looking at all the other Psalms, 4, 5, 11, you know, even 23, which many of us know, that all of these are difficult times, but yet David is saying, I'm looking to you, Lord, and you are protecting me and you are caring for me. All right. So now, lessons or thoughts about what we can learn from some of the things that we talked about hopefully today. The words of others. So how do we react when we have somebody that comes up and tells us something? At this point, he still doesn't understand that what Mephibosheth has said is not what Mephibosheth has said, right? But what was his reaction to that? What was David's reaction to that? And then how do we ourselves understand things that people may say to us, and yet we may not really know? So there's a lot of things to consider whenever we see the advice of Ahithophel, the advice of Hushai, advice of Zibia, or the comments of Zibia. One piece that I did skip on accident in chapter 17 is, what is Ahithophel's response to the fact that his advice was not followed? Yeah. It says he got on a donkey, right? Went back to his hometown, set things in order, then he hung himself. I think one of the questions in the book that we handed out was, why would he have done that? Right, he knew his counsel was right, but what? That's right, the battle was lost. And, you know, if you make your living being an advisor to the king, and then he stops listening to you, what are you doing? He looks at it as, there's not much more for me here, right? This could go bad. And so he ends his own life because of that. But we have to understand that even our reaction to things that people may say to us, that, you know, did you hear that Albert said blah? Right? Nobody goes and talks to Albert. They just hear it. Like, oh, no, you're a pretty trustworthy guy. I'm sure that's what he said. Many things can happen whenever we react wrongly to statements that may be false. So we all have a responsibility to make sure that we understand some of the things that are said. One that I think, you know, I certainly can learn from is, David goes to God and God provides. I wrote that really late last night and it doesn't make any sense on the format, but that's what I meant to say. Right? That's right. So Randall's saying that David never quit, right? He always went back to God. So he never quit, but God always provided for him. Right? And we have to sometimes remember ourselves that God provides for us. And it's not what we do for ourselves. It's not that we're able to accomplish all this. It's God that's providing for us. And we have to remember, as David forgot several times and will continue to forget in the rest of his reign at times, right? He needs to go to God. He needs to go to God. And then God is our shield. God will protect us. It is Him who will take care of us. And so, that's all I had. Any other comments? I know we just got the first bell. So. I talked a lot this morning, but hopefully that will change. All right. Thanks for y'all's attention.